occupation, and agenda. Then he painstakingly corrected what he saw as the multifarious errors in their response. Then he demanded fealty. He was, he explained, the emperor of mankind. He had stoically shepherded his people through the miserable epoch of warp storms, through the age of strife, staunchly maintaining the rule and law of man. This had been expected of him, he declared. He had kept the flame of human culture alight through the aching isolation of old night. He had sustained this precious, vital fragment, and kept it intact, until such time as the scattered diaspora of humanity re-established contact. He rejoiced that such a time was now at hand. His soul leapt to see the orphan ships returning to the heart of the Imperium. Everything was ready and waiting. Everything had been preserved. The orphans would be embraced to his bosom, and then the great scheme of rebuilding would begin, and the Imperium of mankind would stretch itself out again across the stars, as was its birthright. As soon as they showed him proper fealty, as Emperor of mankind. The commander, quite entertained by all accounts, sent Hastur Sejanus to meet with the Emperor and deliver greeting. Sejanus was the commander's favourite. Not as proud or irascible as Abaddon, nor as ruthless as Sedire, nor even as solid and venerable as Yactan Cruz, Sejanus was the perfect captain, tempered evenly in all respects. A warrior and a diplomat in equal measure, Sejanus's martial record, second only to Abaddon's, was easily forgotten when in company with the man himself. A beautiful man, Loken would say, building his tale. A beautiful man, adored by all. No finer figure in Mark IV plate than Hastur Sejanus. That he is remembered, and his deeds celebrated, even here amongst us, speaks of Sejanus's qualities. The noblest hero of the Great Crusade. That was how Loken would describe him to the eager listeners. In future times he will be recalled with such fondness that men will name their sons after him. Sejanus, with a squad of his finest warriors from the 4th Company, travelled in system in a gilded barge, and was received for audience by the Emperor at his palace on the 3rd planet. And killed. Murdered. Hacked down on the onyx floor of the palace, even as he stood before the Emperor's golden throne. Sejanus and his glory squad, Deimos, Malsandar, Gorthoi and the rest, all slaughtered by the Emperor's elite guard, the so-called Invisibles. Apparently, Sejanus had not offered the correct fealty. Indelicately, he had suggested there might actually be another Emperor. The commander's grief was absolute. He had loved Sejanus like a son. They had warred side by side to effect compliance on 100 worlds. But the commander, always sanguine and wise in such matters, told his signalmen to offer the Emperor another chance. The commander detested resorting to war, and always sought alternative paths away from violence, where such were workable. This was a mistake, he reasoned, a terrible, terrible mistake. Peace could be salvaged. This Emperor could be made to understand. It was about then, Loken liked to add, that a suggestion of quote marks began to appear around the Emperor's name. It was determined that a second embassy would be dispatched. Malagurst volunteered at once. The commander agreed, but ordered the spear tip forwards into assault range. The intent was clear. One hand extended open, in peace, the other held ready as a fist. If the second embassy failed, or was similarly met with violence, then the fist would already be in position to strike. That somber day, Loken said, the honour of the spear tip had fallen, by the customary drawing of lots, to the strengths of Abaddon, Torgadon, little Horus Aximand, and Loken himself. At the order, battle musters began. The ships of the spear tip slipped forward, running under obscurement. On board, Stormbirds were hauled onto their launch carriages. Weapons were issued and certified. Oaths of moment were sworn and witnessed.